His pupils spat fire, and his mouth was pursed into a thin line. After a few seconds of silence, he shook his arm out of Blake's grasp, his eyes never leaving his manager's.
"We'll discuss this in the suite. I'm going for a drive. Indy, you're leaving with me."
"Am not," I corrected, on the verge of strangling him while simultaneously screaming. "I'm leaving in our SUV with the rest of the guys."
"Well, then," he said, smiling, "I guess I'll have to get going. Scoring coke in a foreign city is always a hassle."
I was about to stomp in his direction when Blake stopped me, putting a hand on my shoulder.
"I'll deal with this," he said.
A dressing room door opened down the hallway, and Alfie appeared, pink-cheeked. There was a gorgeous brunette in a red mini-dress next to him, and they held hands. I didn't fail to notice that her scarlet lipstick was smeared all over both their faces.
"Can you shut your gobs for one bloody minute? Kind of busy spreading the love here."
"The love or the STDs?"
Alex muttered, lighting a cigarette, his go-fuck-yourself expression on full display. Lucas folded his arms, yawning.
"Sorry, mate. You'll have to take a rain check. Your boss is threatening to relapse because he can't take seeing his drummer and babysitter hanging out."
"Hanging out, huh?"
Alfie chuckled. "Stay strong. Don't hit anyone. You don't need the criminal record. You guys are all idiots," I concluded, storming down the hallway toward the back door where the SUV was waiting for us. "All of you, no exceptions, big-ass babies with fat wallets and too much time." I turned around and stomped away, throwing two middle fingers in the air for emphasis. "I'm going to sit in the SUV and try not to choke from anger. Hope by the time you guys get there, you grow up a little."
"Whole grown here?"
Alfie grabbed his crotch, and this time it was Lucas who slapped the back of his head.
"See you at midnight, Stardust,"
Alex yelled to my retreating back. The brunette squeaked, "Oh my gosh, Alex Winslow, can I have an autograph?" I picked up the pace and recited the mantra I'd told myself earlier, that it was just about the money, temporary and completely meaningless. But the truth was, Alex wanted into my pants, Lucas wanted into my life, and I wanted to get out of this tour alive and whole, heart, body, and soul.
Chapter 9. Alex. George Carlin once said, "What does cocaine make you feel like? It makes you feel like doing more cocaine." George Carlin, ladies and gents, was, in fact, right. With cocaine, I felt more alert, less anxious, and a lot more confident. Coke made me all wired up and worthy of my ridiculous net worth. Coke also made me more sufferable. I'd been less of a dick because I wasn't so worried my shit was shite all the time. And more insufferable, because it made me think I was the shit. Now I was sober, and acutely aware of the fact I needed to justify the money sitting in my bank by coming up with a spectacular album. The word overrated flies around way too much once your art translates into sports cars, high-profiled relationships, and Malibu mansions. Money is also the beginning of the end to art, the kiss of death to creativity, and the cancer to integrity. More on that later. Point is, insecurity is like a snake. It can either suffocate or eat you alive. Your choice, really. The new album made me uneasy, and being uneasy made me a dick. The first people in my line of fire were my staff, so it was no wonder I decided to take it out on Waitrose and his easy smile and unscrupulous intentions. Though, really, was he expecting me to just sit there and let him fuck my very fuckable Hanny? Fuck no.
"What's up with the sitter?"
Blake echoed my thoughts, tucking his phone into the front pocket of his trousers. I stopped strumming Tanya and looked up. We were sitting in the back of a taxi, driving through Melbourne's interesting bits. The Eureka Tower, MCG, the Botanical Gardens, and the Shrine of Remembrance. I knew that since Blake had actually put away his phone to ask me that question, it meant it was serious.
"Specify."
I flicked dirt from under my chewed-up nails.
"You never cared when we hit on your nannies before, and we always have. Christ, Alfie shagged two, and none of them lasted over a week.
My eyes moved to the window, and I tapped my knee to a tuneless rhythm. Oh, my life. Two lines would fix everything. Unclog the lyrics and make me do what I'd been wanting to. Drag Stardust by the hair to the balcony overlooking Melbourne's skyline, and fuck her senseless until she moaned out of key. Allow me to refresh your memory, Blake. None of my sobriety companions made it past the 3-day mark. That's the first fact standing in your way. The second one. This nanny is on the road with us, probably for the remainder of the tour, and I don't need the drama. Third and last, unfortunately, she's no longer disposable. I sort of found a good use for her. Silence sat thick between us. Then,
now it's your turn to specify. What is this something?
Blake wanted Jenna. That much I was certain of. The first time they'd met, he'd asked her about the massive ring on her finger before he asked for her name. She answered she was wearing it specifically for idiots like him, who she wanted to avoid. His sniffing around indigo made zero sense. I plucked a fag from my pack with my teeth and lit it, ignoring the driver who shot me a silent frown from the rearview window. Puffing, I unrolled the window. Indigo turned out to be a bit of a muse to my next album. She's down to earth. I'm sky high. She makes me want to write about the LA of the old films. Just look at her. She dresses like one of those Marilyn Monroe impersonators on the Walk of Fame. I'm starting to come up with the narrative of the album, and she's part of it. The blue-haired girl in the vintage dress, cycling around on her bike, going around trying to piece her heart back together. I was talking out of my arse at this point. My explanation sounded artsy-fartsy at best, and delusional mumbo-jumbo at worst. But that was the beauty of being a musician. No one could dispute your process, even if it essentially involved sitting on a Chinese takeout joint's rooftop, stark naked, balancing a fruit bowl on your head while singing "We Are the World," undoubtedly the worst song to ever be written in the history of, well, the written word.
Huh.
Blake stroked his chin, carefully considering the load of crap I'd fed him with a spoon. I knew he'd do whatever it took to help me write a good album, including skinning Waitrose and using his flesh as a new case for Tanya. The next bit was a tad trickier. See, being an arsehole is an art. I probably needed to do this without blatantly pissing all over the meaning of friendship. But when it came to Lucas, I genuinely didn't care. If anything, I'd be delighted if he found out I was fisting his little girlfriend to the sound of the Pussycat Dolls. I'm also going to fuck her. Blake's jaw slacked, then eased back as he let loose a smile he was trying to bite. Why did he look so satisfied? Did he know something I didn't?
I didn't say it'd be a threesome,
I clarified. He schooled his face back to a scowl.
Shut up, Alex.
The cab stopped in front of our hotel, and it was dark and cold, and for the first time in weeks, I wasn't feeling like my soul had been run over by every vehicle in a 200-mile radius. The crisp air pinched my nose as I slid out of the back seat. Two doormen approached us while Blake paid the driver, tipping him extra for the cigarette stench I'd left in his car. One of the doormen held an umbrella above my head. The other offered to take my guitar. I tisked. No one touched Tanya except me. Blake matched my steps into the building, and for a second, we weren't Alex Winslow and his dapper manager. We were normal 27-year-old blokes, and I was getting shit from my mate for being so insufferably self-centered. There were no barricades, no barriers, and no bodyguards to shield me from the world.
Waitrose wants Indy. He made it clear,
Blake said matter-of-factly when we stepped into the elevator.
You've already dipped into the Lucas pool, mate. Remember Laura?
Vaguely, and only because I didn't have the pleasure of being high at age 14.
We didn't even have hair on our balls back then. Besides, I shagged her long before he started dating her.
I waved him off dismissively.
Laura left him because he was a miserable sod who gave her very little attention.
He'd been itching to go on this tour and join us in LA. When they broke up, I took him in, bought him a plane ticket, brought him to California, same as I did with you. The way he repaid me was throwing Fallon and Will together. Guess what? I still hired his ass as my drummer. Well, now he owes a debt, and I finally chose a way to collect it. He's going to see what it feels like when the girl slips from between your fingers. Spoiler alert, it's not pretty. Not by a long shot. The lift door slid open. The walk to our suite was so quiet, our footfalls on the carpeted floor echoed on the walls in dull thuds. It was 11:54. Part of me wanted to see if Indy would come out to the hallway at midnight, willingly, but the greater part didn't give two shits. There were songs to be written. She was going to help me whether she liked it or not.
"Are you staying outside?"
Blake rubbed his forehead tiredly, his other hand already on the doorknob. I nodded toward my babysitter's room. "I'm finishing this tour with an album." It was a declaration, not a wish.
"With the amount of mess you're creating in the process, you goddamn better."
He pinched the bridge of his nose, slamming the door in my face. 11:55. I stood and stared at her door, wondering if Lucas was there. Surely he wasn't so daft as to try to mess with what was mine. And that was the naked, raw truth. Indigo Bellamy was mine. I paid her to be here. She was at my disposal, for better or worse. I was going to use her, and fuck her, and taunt Lucas with her, because he had nowhere to go. He'd literally have to see it. Day after day, night after night. Like I saw Fallon and Will on every website, in every magazine, and every media outlet in the world. Kissing, hugging, smiling for the camera. "Bushell finds love. State of the art. Will finds his muse. Love on Lankford Lane." 11:56. I swore her door was taunting me. I was sober enough to recognize this wasn't logically plausible. Yet somehow, it was. I needed to knock and get it over with. But something stopped me. 11:57. A sound came from behind the door. A cross between a groan and a moan. Was Waitrose touching her? Was she touching herself? My blood heated in my veins, my dick hardening in my briefs. I imagined her mounting a white hotel pillow, clutching it between her sun-kissed thighs and riding it with her fingers deep inside her pussy. She was so small, I wondered what she'd look like from the inside. Pink and tight and easily bruised. I wanted to stick my tongue in and check, to rip her panties and see if her bum was the same color as her bronzed face and shoulders. The need to know was carnal, like this was the greatest mystery one could possibly unearth. Oomph! My cock strained against my zipper, swelling to a point where I felt my pulse thudding through its veins. 11:58. Footfalls fell along her room. Back, forth, back, forth. She was probably packing, not masturbating. I cupped my dick through my jeans, rearranging my junk and cracking my neck. Right. I needed a fuck. Stardust was still a no-go. She was the get-to-know-you-first type of bird. I made a mental note to jog from the plane the minute we landed in Japan and stick my cock into the first set of open legs I could find. Maybe even at the airport. No matter if I got caught. It wasn't like there was one person in the Western world who hadn't seen my cock yet, including Indy herself. And the way her eyes had brightened when she'd looked at it. 11:59. Restless. Why the fuck was I restless? She was nothing to me. And yet she was obviously something. It was the album, I decided. It was doing my bloody head in. Midnight. The door was still closed. I didn't hear her little feet or feel her approaching, and I should have. Body heat had the ability to move through wood and steel and space. My jaw clenched and my fist curled around her doorknob. It was pointless. The door was automatically locked, and even I was perceptive enough to acknowledge I had no right to barge into her space. 12:01. The girl wasn't going to comply. What a little spitfire she was. I raised my fist to knock on the door. The second my knuckles were about to connect with the wood, it swung open. Indy stood there, her eyes swollen and red. Somewhere in my throat there were words I couldn't say. Mostly profanity, so it was probably good I kept silent.
"I need someone to hold me tonight," she croaked,
hugging her midsection. Her eyes fluttered in defeat at her own sincerity, like she was giving me something precious. Her weakness. And, of course, I took it. I stepped into her room. If there was anyone doing any holding of Indigo Bellamy on this tour, it was going to be me. She pushed me away, her palm connecting with my chest, and stepped outside into the hallway with me. This evening, when she told me about her parents, I'd felt sorry for her. It looked like her parents had actually been decent human beings.
"Let's keep it impersonal, shall we? Weren't you the one who made the rule about staying out of each other's rooms when we write? The hallway is neutral."
"We're way past neutral. And fuck if you aren't being difficult again," I grunted.
"I'm allowed to be whatever I want tonight,"
she sniffed. She was probably right. I wasn't an orphan, but I might as well be, with parents like mine. Not giving her the chance to resist, I immediately wrapped my arms around her body, holding her like breakable china. She wasn't as bony as I thought she'd be. In my mind, she felt like hugging a sack of marbles, when in reality, she was soft everywhere. It made me tighten my arms around her, like she could slip through my fingers, like mist. My chin rested on the top of her head. Her nose was buried in my armpit. She was warm and silky. Delicious, really. I wanted to take her like a drug, all at once in one gulp. I wanted to overdose on her like cocaine and heroin and crack, knowing the destruction I was willingly inhaling into my body. Because Indy, like drugs, was a temporary fix. Once our 3 months were up, she'd leave my surly ass and run back to what was left of her dysfunctional yet loving family. I wouldn't blame her. Hell, I wouldn't even stop her. Because deep down, I knew a bastard like me couldn't keep her.
Indy. The rudest bastard in the world, as it turned out, was also a welcome distraction. Because here I was again, sitting in the hallway, face to face, soul to soul, with the most troubled of them all. Initially, I was going to stay put in my room, even if the entire world collapsed and Alex tried to break down my door. But then Natasha had called me shortly after the show, and I'd realized the last thing I needed was to stay in my room and stew. She'd sounded panicked on the phone. Apparently, Craig's version of being a good husband and father today had been to go MIA the minute he'd stepped out of bed. Nat had gotten a call from her friend Trish saying Craig dropped Ziggy at her place wordlessly, already stinking like an Irish brothel. Nat had had to leave work and rush to pick up Ziggy, then aimlessly look for Craig on the streets while clutching her toddler to her chest. My brother was going to show up back home. We both knew that. He was also going to apologize profusely, promising it'd never happen again. Just a blip. Not after all we've been through. Come on, Nat. You know my family is my everything. Oh, yes, my brother was charming. He'd never raise his voice to his wife, or push her, or blame her for his troubles. Nat would stay, and the crack in their foundation would widen further, with Ziggy's happiness slipping through it.
"If you want to talk about it, do."
Alex's glacial voice pierced through my dark thoughts, his boot between my stretched legs. It only touched my ankles, but still somehow felt deeply inappropriate. Then again, we were in the hallway in plain sight, like all delicious secrets that were meant to stay that way. I considered the unlikely idea. "Would it be helpful to your songwriting?" He did a one-shoulder shrug.
If I knew the answer to that question, I'd have 30 albums under my belt, not 4. And probably enough money to buy the entire city of Los Angeles and consequently burn it down.
You're charming. I rolled my eyes.
Doubtful. I'm not prolific either.
There are solutions for that. Time management classes are kind of big these days. I babbled. He shot me one of his dry looks.
What a great time to be alive. So, you're hissy fit today?
He detoured back to the subject. I tilted my head, studying him. His frown, his natural bee-stung pout, clean-shaven face softened by youth but hardened by life. If it wasn't for his tousled hair and life's a bitch and then you die scowl, he could actually pass for someone else, less intimidating, less soul-sucking, less dangerous for my heart. He was so beautiful and talented and adored and miserable. How could you have so much and feel so little? I opened my mouth, knowing the truth would come out, but afraid of hearing it. I always knew my life would have this big, colossal catastrophe, even before it actually happened. It was like I was waiting for it, in a way, for something to define me. I spent my youth sitting in my room sewing clothes, content with being a weirdo, as you so diplomatically put it. My brother Craig was just the opposite, hot-shot football player with a cheerleader on his arm.
And did it?
Alex asked, his army boot caressing the inside of my ankle, riding up my calf. The worst part was that I let him do it. Yesterday, I wouldn't have, and tomorrow I would swat him away. But today, I was fragile enough for him to make me feel good, even if it was a bad decision.
Define you, I mean.
No, it didn't. I have this chip on my shoulder I carry with me everywhere I go, of the girl who's been robbed of her parents. But I still smile and laugh and spend time with my nephew and friends. My tragedy is like an ugly scar that's hidden from the world. Only I can see it.
Mine's the opposite.
He smirked, fingering the strings of his guitar absentmindedly.
My tragedy is an open wound every fucker in the universe can poke and look into. My fiancée left me for my ex-best friend publicly, after it was revealed in the tabloids that she'd been fucking him while we were still together while I was on tour. I'm an addict, a knobhead, and a bitter asshole who can't even sit still when his enemy receives a Grammy. Everyone can and does see my scars. No exceptions. My soul is empty because I hoard it out. I signed fat contracts with huge labels to get big money. For the last 6 years, they've dictated my every move. And whatever they didn't suck out of me, the crowd did. Because every night you go on that stage, Indy, you give your fans your everything. Every fucking thing. Then you wake up the next day and do it all over again.
I was so surprised at his admission. The fact I uttered anything at all was nothing short of a miracle. Is that why you act this way? Not that it gave him an excuse, but the need to understand him better burned me from the inside. Alex rolled his head against the wall.
Enough with the philosophical bullshit. So, this is not inspiring at all. Tell me about your sex life.
I gave him a look, my walls stacking up again, brick by brick. No.
That 'cause you don't have any, because that could be rectified.
It's because it's none of your business, and while we're on the subject, I'd appreciate it if you stopped hitting on me. He put his guitar down, snatched a cigarette from his open pack by his feet, a notepad and a blue Sharpie, and started writing. Blue Sharpie, just like in the article. Alex was a creature of habit. I wondered what it was about the color. There was something incredibly sexy about seeing him, an unlit cigarette hanging between his straight teeth, making art in front of me. I had no idea what he was writing, and I doubted he'd let me know if I asked, but the idea that I might hear it on the radio someday made me shiver.
If you want me to believe you about not wanting me to fuck you raw, you should probably stop looking at me like that, like you're already mine.
He said, his eyes still focused on his notepad. I looked away, my face growing ruddy and hot. You're crass,
and you're full of bullshit.
He looked up, catching my gaze.
You really like Waitrose. Really, really like him. I don't believe that. Not for one second. Know what the difference is between you and me, Stardust. You watch me, but I see you. And what I see is your truth. You wear your heart on your sleeve, and it bleeds into the real world, which means you're a remarkably terrible liar. You look at Wade Rose fondly, like you would at a stranger's baby down the street. You look at me with dynamite in your eyes, waiting for me to light up the match and finally set you on fire.
Everything stopped. The air, the world, my heart. He said all that with his lips still pursed around the cigarette, with dead eyes and a sultry, rough voice he'd tone down and sweeten when he recorded his music. A door opened and closed in the distance, and we both snapped our heads in its direction. It was Alfie, ushering two giggling girls in miniskirts toward the elevator. He smacked their butts as he rushed them between the doors, not even sparing us a glance. They skipped, their voices pitching high, while he barked like a mad dog, pretending to bite and nibble at their necks. He hadn't noticed us. "We're heading to the airport in less than 2 hours." I cleared my throat after the laughter died down. Alfie and the girls rounded the hallway. "Did you get everything you needed?"
"Not by a long shot."
He leaned forward, his hand clasping my wrist. His gaze held mine hostage.
"And neither did you."
I rolled to my knees quickly and stood up. Alex did the same, his guitar and notepad still on the floor. We stood in front of each other, not like strangers anymore, and that scared me.
"One for the road,"
he said, hooking his finger into the neckline of my hoodie and jerking me close. His arms enveloped me, the tip of the cigarette in his mouth tickling my neck. I felt his hug in my stomach, in my groin, and in my toes. His arms felt coarse, but the moment felt eerily soft. I squeezed selfishly, burrowing into his white V-neck tee while closing my eyes. Inhaling, inhaling, inhaling. "I miss you, Mom. I miss you, Dad." It's when you memorize the small things in a person that you realize you're screwed. I liked the stale scent of cigarette smoke between his fingers and the sour, masculine smell of his neck. The way his wavy hair curled at the sideburns, silky and boyish, and the way his strong jaw looked almost comical in contrast with his stupidly cute ears. When he finally loosened his hold on me, I looked up, and he looked down, and every sense was floodlit. A ping rang between us. The elevator, probably, but he couldn't have noticed. Not with the way his browns held my blues. This was his chance to make a move. He'd said he was going to have me, and tonight I wanted to be taken. After all, if you make one horrifyingly bad choice in your life, better do it on a day that represents your parents' death anniversary, right? His lips were close. His pulse quickened under his shirt. Warm, warm, so warm. I took a deep breath, closed my eyes, opened my mouth, stood on my tiptoes, and stumbled forward into nothingness. As my eyes cracked open, the emergency door at the end of the hall slid shut automatically, still pushing the last hints of his intoxicating scent. I looked down. His notepad and Sharpie were still there. Cold. Cold. So cold. He'd gone to smoke that cigarette and left me all alone. Chapter 10. Indy. I think the 10-minute song is going to be really good. Jenna.
I hope you didn't tell him that.
Indy. No, I told him it's unmarketable. Hudson.
And what did he say?
Indy. He said I sounded like a suit, specifically like Jenna Holden. And that Jenna Holden was hired to get him Belmont deals and negotiate fat deals with record labels, not produce his next album. He also said he'd once caught you nodding your head at a Maroon 5 song, and the fact that you're not dead to him after that is a miracle in itself, so you should not push your luck. Again, his words, not mine. Hudson.
Classic Alex.
Jenna.
We'll have to work on that. Indigo, how's his mood? Does he look okay to you?
I didn't know how to answer that.
Alex constantly looked like his soul was shattered, but his bravado was steel and metal. I didn't know him well enough to know if his current state was good, bad, or indifferent. He didn't look like he was having suicidal tendencies, but I wasn't exactly a qualified shrink. Indy. He's crabby, but fine. Hudson.
That's his default setting.
Indy. He and Lucas aren't getting along. Hudson.
When did they ever?
Jenna. Keep us posted, Indigo. Jenna. Indigo? Indy. I said I only answer to Indy.
Hudson. Burn.
Hudson.
Also, I think Alex is rubbing off on you a bit.
Oh, he had no idea.
Alex. Tokyo, Japan. Not so fun fact. When you're an alcoholic, holding a bottle of champagne in your hand is the equivalent of clutching a semi-automatic weapon. Destructive, but somehow still fucking legal in all 50 states. I don't know who the fucker was who kept on sending them to every room I'd stayed at during this tour, but whoever they were, they had inside information, malicious intent, and a lot of free time on their hands. Every time we rolled into a new city, Blake, Jenna, and Hudson all made sure to call the hotel and warn the local staff to empty the minibar of alcohol. I was kept away from everything I could get high on, including mouthwash, dust remover, and hand sanitizers. I swear, the fact I still smelled remotely pleasant was a fucking miracle. And though I was too busy hating the world to actively look to score or get pissed, my sobriety was mainly a product of circumstances and laziness. And now I had a bottle of champagne and a minute by myself. Fancy that. Knowing Blake would come upstairs to our hotel room any second, and that Indy had a keycard to my presidential suite, I quickly wrapped the bottle in a hoodie and shoved it into one of my suitcases. They'd both lose their shit had they known I'd found the bottle on the threshold. The first time Blake had opened the door to find a bottle of Jameson, he tossed it out of the window and cursed, watching it swan dive into the ocean. The second time, he'd hired a PI and treated himself to a 20-minute meltdown in the bathroom. And Indy, she would go on a hunt all over the world to track down the twat who tried to throw me off the wagon, turning every stone over until they were found. Never mind the fact I thought I knew exactly who the bastard was, and where he was, in bed with my ex-girlfriend. Which reminded me, I needed to throw the plan of fucking Stardust into high gear before I got back with Fallon. She may have been a cheater, but I wasn't. The decision wasn't calculated or even particularly smart. Sure, I saw Indy bawling into herself like a kitten on the couch of the private jet with her head on Lucas's thighs, his crotch. But it wasn't like I was jealous. My heart rolled in my chest helplessly like a wounded soldier, because Waitrose didn't deserve anything, much less the only girl on the tour. The only girl on the tour. If anyone was going to fuck this girl, it'd be me, not my backstabbing drummer and frenemy. Rising up from my open suitcase, where the champagne had been placed carefully on the side, covered by clothes, I walked across the darkened room, the wrought iron chandelier looming from the ceiling like a devious monster. The wallpaper was black, with Japanese letters smeared in red. I stopped by the kitchen island, flipping over my notebook with the notes from last night. Progress. My soul didn't feel quite as empty when I strode over to the floor-to-ceiling window overlooking Tokyo. Clean, busy. Sophisticated. Tokyo was built high, wide, and in long strokes, like she'd been painted by a confident artist. I'd been here once before, and had made some pretty sweet memories in the form of a foursome and a dirty underwear vending machine I'd emptied. When my phone rang, I didn't immediately move. The only people I spoke with were already on the tour, as pathetically tragic as it may sound. And Jenna and the rest of my management usually liaised directly with Blake, because he was less likely to be a volatile tosser. I withdrew my mobile from my back pocket, frowning. Mum. Not today, Mother dearest. I let the call die, watching as the screen lit up again with another call as if on cue. She hadn't called when I broke up with Fallon, or when I'd been thrown into rehab the first time. The second time, she hadn't even answered said phone when I'd been desperate enough to want to talk to anyone, her useless ass included. In fact, the only time she had picked up the phone to talk to me was after the Grammys incident, to tell me I had circles around my eyes and that blue is not my color. This meant she either needed to break some bad news or ask for more money to nourish her plastic surgery / gambling habits. Unfortunately for her, I was working on not letting people screw me over. Since Mum was about as constructive in my life as fucking leukemia, I chose to cut her out. Blake walked through the door, talking to Jenna on the phone.
Jenna! Jenna! Jenna!
The last one was peppered with exhaustion.
I've got it all under control. Trust me. And if, by any chance, I need to leave him alone for a few hours, Indy will take over. Girl watches him like a hawk.
I flicked my cigarette into the trash, the amber tip still burning. The scent of something unnatural melting, plastic or polyester, spread around the room, and I plopped down on the low black couch and stared at the ceiling.
What's up?
Blake asked, boomeranging his mobile across the black marble island. I stole a bottle of champagne, and I'm probably going to drink it in one gulp next time you take a shit.
I wrote a song.
Much better.
Is it any good?
Blinking slowly, I tried ungluing my teeth from my tongue.
Think I would have told you if it was shite.
Of course it's good. Though really, who the hell knew? Art is like love. It's too subjective for you to see it clearly.
Wanna play it for me?
Blake collapsed on the love seat across from me. As if on cue, Alfie and Lucas walked in the main door, waltzing toward the sofa I occupied and taking their seats. The new track was 10 minutes long, way longer than the average song, but for the first time in ages, I believed in something I'd done. It felt good.
Yeah, play it for us, Winslow. Serenade us like you mean it.
Alfie batted his eyelashes, clutching the fabric of his shirt over his heart. Lucas looked tense and didn't say a thing, which was probably good, considering how our last conversation had ended. I smirked.
I still need to polish a few things. I'll give you the notes soon.
Notes for what?
Alfie shoved his bacteria-infested hand into a bowl of chocolate-coated strawberries in the middle of the coffee table. No way was I touching those strawberries, or that table, or anything else in the fucking suite now. I wasn't much of a germaphobe, but the bloke was made of 50% flesh and blood and 50% jizz.
My new song.
You wrote a song?
I wrote a song.
Let me guess,
Lucas said.
Indy helped?
I paused for 1 second before deciding I was above acknowledging his existence.
I told Lucas I saw you guys hugging down the hall yesterday.
Alfie volunteered, his mouth full, red juice dripping all over his chin.
Just, you know, to spice things up.
Wanker,
Blake muttered, shaking his head. Lucas continued to stare at me like I'd killed his fucking kitten. The fact he had feelings for Stardust was bizarre to me. They'd known each other for less than a week. Where had he acquired all those feelings? His newly found vagina?
She was there when I wrote the song,
I said noncommittally, refusing to make her a bigger deal than she was. Lucas's jaw was tight and square.
The moment we saw her at the chateau, you knew I had my eye on her.
Yeah? Well, maybe that inspired me to have my eyes on her too. I shrugged, turning on the TV and flipping channels. Waitrose closed his eyes and fell back on the sofa, releasing a sigh.
It's not a good idea, Alex. Even if it wasn't for me, you are not in the right headspace to start a relationship. You need to battle your demons first.
Relationship? I laughed.
Who the fuck wants a relationship?
The end game, Will Bushell, was waiting for me around the corner in Paris in just a few weeks' time. Lucas's presence reminded me that Fallon was going to be with him, and it was time to reclaim her. Lucas reminded me of a lot of things, but most of all, he reminded me I was a competitive bastard, and every single thing I did to prove one thing. I was still number one. Best artist, best musician, best lover. I got up from my seat, peeling off my wrinkly tank top. I was a semi-automatic weapon, fully loaded and ready to fire. I was my own downfall, and deep down, I knew it. Yesterday, I lay with you in a bed of glass. We broke together, trying to survive your past. Still, in your pain, I found magic. The beauty in something so raw and tragic. When life feels banal and ordinary and beat, run to me, my blue-eyed girl, to the place where pleasure and pain meet. The crowd went nuts. A veteran artist knows how to recognize a real buzz from miles away. There's the usual buzz, the "we like everything you do" type of excitement. Then there's the promotional buzz, the one that smells of glossy brochures and PR women in pencil skirts and brunches at the Ivy to close a nice fat deal with a top-notch radio station. Then there's the real buzz. This buzz. It hums in your veins, not unlike morphine, floods your entire body until every hit of oxygen feels like downing a shot. I watched my fans beneath my boots, clawing out of their own skin with elation. They skulked over security, desperate to get to me, yelling, screaming, begging, more, more, more. The flashes blinded me as I finished playing Secondhand Love, the song I wrote after I left Stardust standing in the hall. 9 minutes and 23 seconds of anger, frustration, and passion. I could have kissed her, and another bloke probably would have kissed her. But where was the fun in that? I liked playing with my food, and that included driving her crazy until she could take no more of it. I wanted to make her cunt ache and drip for it, because when I finally touched her, the star would turn into dust. Pacing the stage, I threw them a crooked smile over my shoulder. I was shirtless, first sign that I was in a good mood. Usually I didn't like the whole Justin Bieber, see my abs shite. This wasn't Hooters, and once you let your record label fuck you in the arse, the least you could do for yourself is keep your bloody shirt on. But I felt like I was standing in the middle of a bonfire, singing that song to a crowd for the first time. Sweat trickled down my torso, and I could see on the huge screen behind me that the cameraman zoomed in on the drops running down my V-tap. I wondered how long it'd be before the video hit YouTube, and which would be more successful, my new song, or a picture of me fisting that starlet while coming all over her tits. Probably the latter. I decided to Google it sometime. It wasn't like I fucking cared what people said about me anyway. "There's more where that came from!" I adjusted the mic on its stand and walked across the stage. The screams became louder, more frantic. Yeah, this wasn't polite encouragement. This was hunger, immediate and greedy. I was vindictive and complicated and back. Fuck, I was back. I had lyrics in me and they were gushing out. It was futile to pretend Stardust didn't have a hand in this. She did. And I was going to keep her until the last drop of greatness poured out of me, or her, whoever it came from. I looked down at my fans, then up at the inky sky, then in between, to the space where a golden cloud of body heat and bright lights powdered above their heads, and smiled. I put my lips to the mic. My fingers strumming my guitar, I started to play Man Meets Moon, one of my earliest tunes. When I didn't need a blue-haired girl to save me. When I was a teenager with an agenda and a lot of fucking mind to speak. A kid who didn't know where the Chateau Marmont was, and only knew about caviar from the movies. The video of Man Meets Moon had been filmed in Lucas's basement by Blake. I'd had a zit the size of Beirut on my chin that day, but it still gave me the big break I'd needed. Alfie, Lucas, and the back guitarist followed suit. I gave the back guitarist a slight head nod, and his eyes widened in disbelief. Everyone on my tour knew what it meant. I hadn't done that in 2 years, but it was time. He needed to cover for me while I crowdsurfed. And I was going to crowdsurf. Because tonight, it felt so real and right. Good and bright. Just like Coke.
Chapter 11. Indy.
Oh my life, that was bloody epic!
Blake jumped on Alex before the rock star could stumble all the way backstage. His bare chest glistened with sweat, and the red marks painting his abs and back made a blush creep up my neck. I knew they were put there by his fans, and I also knew what these fans thought about when they raked their fingernails over his skin. It was the same thing I thought about when I watched him move so confidently across the stage, like an angry god, Mars, out for blood. Blue-eyed girl. Just hearing his husky, hoarse baritone say those words made me rub my thighs together, trying to relieve the tension between them. He'd written about me. He'd sung about me. And true, he'd referred to me as a mental rebound, but who the hell cared? He'd given me a song. I hadn't even given him a kiss. I inhaled sharply, drinking him in. For the first time since I'd boarded the plane in Los Angeles, I was anxious and curious about my time with Alex tonight, about the hallway. Something had changed yesterday when we'd hugged, better and worse. It was like we'd become closer and drifted apart at the same time. Standing in the shadows backstage, I let Alex have his moment with his friends. Alfie clasped his shoulders and shook him with an evil laugh. Fans took pictures of him. Lucas was smiling so hard I thought his face would split in two. Then Luke turned to me, almost in slow motion, walking over and snaking his arm around my waist, yanking me into a hug and burying his face inside my hair. I gasped. Sure, we were close. Kind of. We hung out, mainly on the plane and in hotel lobbies, but nothing more than that. There wasn't some brave, soul-linking friendship between us. There wasn't a bond. So this came out of left field. Always one to please, I plastered on a reassuring grin and joined the claps in the circle of human appreciation that had formed around Alex, politely ignoring Lucas's advances.
Brilliant, wasn't it?
Luke squeezed me into his shoulder again. I hmmed in response, my smile faltering. Alex's laughter continued as he took in the people around him, the boyish glint in his brown-green eyes making my stomach do cartwheels, and his head swiveled in slow motion until his eyes landed on Lucas's arm flung across my shoulder. The smile dropped. So did my heart, straight to my underwear. Wicked heart, traitorous heart, unreliable heart.
Stardust,
he barked. And I didn't know why his referring to me by my moniker made me blush, but it did. I swallowed hard and pretended to comb my hair away from my face, when really I was hiding from the world. What's up?
Need you for a sec. Come here.
I disconnected from Lucas, walking over to Alex without glancing at any of the people around us. Most of their faces didn't even register to begin with, which was becoming more and more of a problem when Alex was around. He surprised me by taking my hand in his and ushering me through the narrow black maze backstage. I didn't ask him where we were going. If he was feeding off of my fear and hesitation, I didn't want to give him anything I wasn't willing to part ways with, like my dignity. Alex Winslow was a two-faced man. One was the cold asshole devil he gave me now, the one who wanted me to kneel. The other was his playful, relaxed self. The one I'd hung out with at the laundromat. Needless to say, both versions were unpredictable, and I did the right thing by being cautious. We stopped at the end of the hallway on the opposite side from the dressing rooms. A small balcony overlooked the crowd of yelling fans, most of them still hopefully milling around, their eyes pinned to the stage, pleading, wanting, wishing for their star to come out and maybe give them an encore, another sliver of greatness. Alex led me to the black metal banisters until we were in complete darkness, cloaked behind the huge projectors pointing at the stage. We were alone, in the dark. The chill of the Tokyo air whispered against our skin. Alex flattened a hand over my lower back, gluing me to the banisters until the cold metal dug into my stomach. He crept behind me, his breath shallow and warm against the shell of my ear. His torso was still naked, and he was hot, smooth, and hard everywhere. I longed to feel him, really feel him.
I told you to stay away from Waitrose.
And I told you I'll do whatever the hell I want in my personal life, I whispered back, both our eyes still staring down at the screaming fans.
Are you gonna give me trouble?
Me? I gasped. Kinetic energy flowed between us. My skin felt prickly and agitated, like I needed to step out of my clothes and feel his skin or I'd die. Why? I thought I was just a sport. I threw the words he'd told Jenna when we first met. No, I hadn't forgotten. Yes, they still stung. Just not as much as being so goddamn poor. He chuckled, his breath tickling my skin, his nose nuzzling into my neck.
You're an enjoyable sport, like footy.
See how much you like me when I knee you in the balls, I muttered. He said.
I was just thinking about you massaging them while you suck my cock.
Never gonna happen. I shifted, my center physically aching with want.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Help me choose her, then.
He rasped, dragging his lips up from my shoulder to my jawline. I let him touch me despite knowing everything, that he was an addict, a rock star, and an asshole. That he was in love with a girl named Fallon who'd broken his heart and he'd never quite managed to glue it back together again. That his broken heart meant he could never love again, not in the way I deserved to be loved. And so he was nothing more than a painting, a beautiful thing that could never be of use.
Her?
I asked gravelly.
The girl I'm going to be inside of while I imagine fucking you tonight.
The taunt in his voice had a lilt. My eyes broadened as I stared down at them, my competition, all young and pretty and keen. I wanted to turn around and slap him across the face, but that would only serve as a reminder that I cared, and I didn't want him to know that. Slowly, I brushed my palm against the railing, smiling at nothing. He viewed me as a sport, which meant there would be a winner and a loser in our little game. Isn't gig night also hallway night? Are you bailing out on me for a playdate, Winslow? He kept silent for a few beats, and my heart picked up speed before he swiveled me, his hand on my waist. We stared into each other's eyes. The fans beneath us shuffled and shouted and hooted, yet it felt like we were all alone.
Are you fucking him?
His thumb pressed against my stomach. If I am, you'd be the last person I'd confide in. I took a step sideways. I'm leaving now. He caught me by the elbow, turning me around. My chest crashed into his now cold sweat mixing with the fabric of my dress.
Lucas is a nice lad, but he's not what you're after.
Oh, and you are. You're in love with someone else. I laughed bitterly.
I never said anything about loving you, Stardust. Now fucking you is something else entirely.
Well, when you put it that way. I rolled my eyes before walking back to the busy hallway. He followed behind me, not catching my steps, purposely staying behind me, praying.
Huh,
I heard him say, and I snapped my head in his direction, my eyebrows pinched together. I couldn't keep up with his stupid games. Her who? Stop speaking in codes, Alex.
There's no code. Look at where I'm pointing. Huh, I'm going to fuck her tonight.
His finger was pointed at a pretty brunette who stood by a vending machine backstage, clasping a clipboard to her chest and talking on the phone. She was wearing tight jeans, a cropped Alex Winslow shirt, and looked deliciously sordid, every movement and curve in her body designed to seduce. I took a deep breath, trying not to lose it. It was hard, with Alex attempting to provoke me every step of the way. Think about Ziggy. Think about Craig. Think about the big picture. Mazel tov. Do you want me to hold your hand while you're with her?
That would be logistically challenging, but cheers for offering. Just have her sign an NDA before I take her back. I don't fuck without a non-disclosure since Cockgate.
He lit a cigarette, strolling toward the guys, his back to his next conquest and me. My whole face flamed with anger. I took a few deep breaths to calm myself before following him. You want me to go to her and ask her to sign a non-disclosure agreement before you have sex with her? And you haven't even approached her yet? I matched his step. Jesus H, if this was how Alex behaved completely sober, I dreaded to think what Blake and co. had gone through when he'd been high as a kite.
Correct.
What makes you think she'll say yes? He tapped my nose with the hand that held the cigarette, smirking down at me like I was the simplest creature in the world.
So fucking precious, Stardust. Just do it. We're heading back to the hotel in 10.
And off he walked. I wasn't his assistant. I was his sobriety companion. It occurred to me I wasn't obligated to help him score. Furthermore, for the most part, it was probably for the best if I didn't do that. I mean, there was no mistaking the current moving through my body. I was jealous beyond words, belief, and logic. But maybe that was exactly why I needed to let it go and comply. I needed to show him I didn't care. I needed to show myself I didn't care. We were 1 week into a 3-month tour, and already he'd declared his intention to get me into his bed and turn my life upside down. I couldn't give him this power over me. I had my family and future to think about, and they were more important than any British hunk with eyes like molten gold and a devastating smirk. I cleared my throat, squared my shoulders, and walked over to the girl. With every step I took, I inwardly prayed she was like me, guarded and rational. That she would laugh in my face and tell me to take a hike. That she would turn red, personally walk over to Alex Winslow, and slap him in the name of feminism and self-respect. I stopped about a foot from her, tapping her shoulder to grab her attention. She turned around, a mixture of surprise and annoyance between the creases of her frowny face. "Hi," I smiled, swallowing down my nervousness. Every muscle in my face betrayed me, and I was sure I looked at least a little psychotic. "I work for Alex Winslow. He sent me here because he's interested in driving me nuts, spending the night with you. So I'm wondering if you'd like that, and if so, would you be willing to sign a non-disclosure agreement?" I wasn't even sure where the hell I was going to find one, but my instincts told me Blake must have them handy. He was legally savvy. Come to think about it, he was everything savvy. The girl's frown disappeared, replaced with a nose-wrinkled expression of disbelief. "I know, right? What a bastard. So just say no, and we can all go back to pretending this never happened." "Alex Winslow wants to spend the night with me?" "Seems that way." I hated her for not slamming the idea right away, hated him for sending me over to her, but most of all, I hated myself for being stupid enough to go ahead with it to prove something to the world. "I don't believe you." I turned around, did a little hand wave toward the guys, and caught their attention. All of them swiveled to stare at me. Lucas looked pained. Blake looked tired. Alex smiled his arrogant wolf's grin, raising an eyebrow and his hand, tipping it slightly forward in a high motion. "I hope she has an STD. I hope she has all the STDs known to man, and a few new ones she'd created all on her own." "See?" I turned back to the lady in question. "He's in." "Oh my God, then so am I. I mean, I'd like to look at his contract, but..." She had an Aussie accent. Suddenly, I took Oliver in, gulping every detail. Her luscious black hair, her dark feline eyes, her pierced navel and snow-white skin. My wide-eyed, freckled average self hated every inch of her, and that made me feel guilty. I mustered a smile. "Fantastic. Be right back. Don't go anywhere." I soldiered on to the boys, adding a fake bounce to my step. Two could play this game. I may not have a lot of experience, or millions of fans, or billions of dollars, but I was good. I was strong, and I was worthy, and yes, I sure as hell was equal to him. "She's in," I said, yanking a bottle of water from the long table of refreshments behind them and unscrewing the top. Turning toward Blake, I took a slow sip. Can you provide her with an NDA? She said she'd like to look at it, but judging by the time it took her to say yes, I'm pretty sure she's a skimmer.
Well, damn, Blue.
Blake's eyebrows were kissing his hairline.
No wonder Jenna likes you. You have a good set of hairy balls on you.
Not sure about hers, but mine are waxed. I winked. All the guys laughed as Blake sauntered over to the girl with an agreement in his hand. It was the first time he'd called me Blue, and even though the moment felt like the end of the world, it also felt like a beginning of something, of acceptance. All the guys laughed but Alex, who stared holes into my forehead, his look alone threatening to kill someone, preferably me.
You're one cool bird, know that?
Lucas moved beside me, brushing his shoulder against mine. Alex grabbed the bottle of water.